And we are here on the pre-show.
Hello, everybody.
Greg is trying to make a database for Craft Beer Radio.
The idea is eventually to make a new site, but I want to get all the data into a usable format. And right now, the preliminary number of breweries, this is not complete because there are some that we don't have. I haven't gone and listened to all the shows again. I've just basically worked off our show notes, and some of the notes are incomplete. 331 different breweries that we've tasted just doing shows. I mean, that doesn't count stuff that we've had, at festivals and things like that. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of breweries that we had, and a heck of a lot.
It means
of
a lot of breweries we haven't had too.
Well, with 2,000 plus breweries in the U.S. alone, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of breweries we haven't had, but still a lot that we have had, and it's fun going through the list. And I was saying to Jeff, sometimes you come across a brewery that that brewery is gone. Like very at the very beginning of the show, was it third or fourth episode? Where was it? I'm trying.
Cellus White, is that the one you're talking?
Well, Cellus is yeah, Cellus is gone.
Yeah, Michigan. Yeah.
Uncle Nut's Nut Brown Ale, I think Edenton Brewing Company is gone.
I don't even remember that one. Beer at all. Uncle Nut's.
Yeah, Edenton Brewing is gone. That was episode 4. It actually, I was surprised by how many breweries were still around.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there might be more breweries that were just gone, and that's not the case. But Frederick Brewing Company is gone. They had Blue Ridge Steeple Stout.
Right.
That was episode 10. So, I mean, you go through these and what I am pleasantly happy about, but I guess it shouldn't be that big a surprise. I mean, we started in 2005, and people hadn't embraced the internet as much as they do today. Now every brewery has a website.
Right.
It was a much different situation back then.
Yeah.
So, getting all those. So, yeah, what I have is a table with all the breweries that I have so far, 331, with their websites, if they still exist, the location of the brewery, and links to their pages, their record page on both Beer Advocate and Rate Beer. I think having both is
mm-hmm.
It's good. I didn't input like Twitter and Facebook things. I don't know whether that's something maybe we can add later if necessary. There's a whole lot of things. I'm building a first pass, and then I want to build an interface that works well, and then do a second pass at some data. Like I want to get eventually. I do want to go through all the episodes and get time codes for where you're going. That's going to be a big, long, arduous process to do.
Right.
But, it'll be ultimately worthwhile.
We haven't had this conversation since you restarted this project, but a while ago you had this idea, and I was trying to talk you out of it. I was trying to say, there's so much data, and dare I say unstructured data, there's because some things are here, some things are there. Mm-hmm. Do we add Twitter? Don't we add Twitter? Where I was... I initially had set up the CBR wiki, hoping that community would support this data collection and organization, and it never took off. I still think a wiki is a how do I want to put it? A less overhead way to manage the data, right? Because, if you decide you want to do something one way for one brewery because of a special circumstance, right? Then you can just do it one way for that brewery, right?
Yes.
Where with a database, you have to make sure the database can handle all the special circumstances. And, excuse me, my sneeze.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think having that data available for us to peruse and for people who are listening to peruse and ultimately having the important thing.
I mean, the only thing the database is going to get you that a wiki, a well-done wiki, wouldn't is reporting.
Right.
Being able to some numbers and things like that, right? I mean, because a wiki search will be able to find all the information you're searching for.
Yeah, but it won't be structured, and I won't be able to... I mean, the nice thing about getting all the data is I can build anything around it, and I can rebuild a completely new thing around the data.
Sure. You
know, if I have that data in a structured way and in this relational database, then it's going to be really easy, I mean, comparatively easy to just rebuild a whole new structure around and present it any way we want to present it. And that's really what I'm going for.
Right. And what are you putting it in? SQL Server? Or?
Yeah, right now doing... You gave me the hint to try the...
That free Azure...
Yeah, the Windows Azure thing. And so right now I'm putting it in SQL Server. But I'm also... Once I get in... I'm putting it in SQL Server because I'm just doing web stuff to do data entry. And then I'm copying it to Google's spreadsheets so that I have a backup copy that we can then import into whatever database we'd like.
Mm-hmm.
When we ultimately get a website running. But I'm used to SQL Server, so I want to, just want to do the stuff with that because it's easy for me to jump right into doing my stuff with that. But there's still a lot of work to do. There's still a lot of data that needs to go and need to build a way to do easy searches for when I add the beers because I have all the brewers in there, but I'm not going to... But I want to have a search when I'm doing the entry for adding the breweries. Otherwise, it's going to be a pain in the ass to check a database every time for every brewery. It's a complicated project, but I'm into it right now. So
okay, cool.
Yeah. The other thing. it's funny because I've been spending basically a couple of days so far doing this, and then in my off time, I've been studying. I'm trying to re-up myself on the math required for particle physics. That's what I do for fun: is relearn the math that I need for particle physics. Right now, it's simple trigonometric stuff and complex conjugates and complex numbers and things like that. But that's all. Quantum physics really is just have to have a really good understanding of this stuff and Hermitian matrices and things like that. And those are Hermitian matrices are just, it's just a matrix that has eigenvalues that are real, diagonals that's real, and then the other values are complex conjugates of one another.
Okay.
Do you remember your complex numbers?
Complex numbers?
So your complex numbers are like 4 minus 6i is a complex number.
Okay, vaguely.
And a complex conjugate is just 4 plus 6i. That's the complex conjugate of 4 minus 6i. It's just switching the... And the reason why I do that is because you can't have... If you're doing simplification, you can't have an I in the denominator. So you have to have some way to do... operations with it. But it turns out that all this stuff actually applies to the way the quantum world works, or at least the way that we understand the quantum world is probably the best way to put it. The way that we have... The only way you can really understand it is through the math, and I want to get the full understanding of it. And it's a lot of...
getting hot in here. I gotta take my sweatshirt off.
It's getting
Greg's
hot.
Greg's heating it up with the... complex conjugates sense.
It really isn't, it sounds a lot more imposing than it actually is. It's not altogether difficult math. It's just a lot to get your head around and to remember how you do these sort of operations and things like that. So I'm just, so that's what I do for fun in between entering all this stuff.
Maybe you'll get a job in particle physics instead of in computers.
I doubt it. I really want to know this stuff. I like to. I think it's frightfully important. This kind of thing, and I want to know the. I want to know as many true things as possible, And I want to know the best way we have of interpreting all these true things. And that's the math.
Right.
And particle physics. So, I mean, there's lots of math that... There's lots of cool subjects that I could learn otherwise. Like, I mean, I'm not even concentrating at all on solid state physics or, you know, condensed matter physics, which there's so much interesting stuff that I'm just passing right by, and I won't ever get as full understanding as I'm trying to get on higher energy particle physics. But for some reason, this is what gets me, because I think that there is something fundamental about stuff that it really is sort of the fundamental building blocks of reality, and that to me is fascinating.
Yeah, it is. I've been so quiet lately because you've so far outpaced, you know, my conversational knowledge of such things that, you know, usually when you're in physics these days, it, you know, Jeff sits back and listens and, you know, only groks a small portion of it. So,
I mean, I'm not trying to be like, I heard one person complained that I was, that it sounded like I was trying to be all know-it-all. That's not the point. I'm so in love with this stuff that I want to share it. It's like with the beers, you know, we're so in love with beers that we want to share our love and we want to share our experience. And the same thing is happening with the particles. I love it. I can't get enough of it. At the same time, I'm trying to, every time I explain it to Jeff and to anybody else who listens, it's not just me saying, oh, you know, this is how the works. It's also me in my head figuring out, you know, it's that old saying that if you can't give a lecture on it, you don't really understand. If you can't give a, you know, if you can't give a freshman lecture on something, you don't understand. And so I'm trying to figure out, do I understand this enough to explain it?
Right.
And, you know, hopefully sometimes it does work.
Gotcha.
What else is going on?
Yesterday was a beautiful day. Took it off. Ellie and I went ice skating. We were like the only ones on the rink. We took the afternoon session at North Park. It was, you know, like 50 degrees, but it was, you know, cold the night before, so the ice was in really good shape, and it was a lot of fun. Ellie's picking up a bad habit, though. I might have to get her hockey skates. You know, she's been running, you know, figure skates, and she's using the toe picks to go instead of, you know, kind of pushing sideways and backwards, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And it's fine, but then I realized the way she's doing it, you know, she's more likely to bring her foot forward and drag the toe picks on the ice and trip herself. And it's just a harder way to skate. And so I'm trying to figure out how to break her from this habit, but she didn't eat before we went ice skating, so she was getting hungry, not very patient. So it didn't go so well. So one way to break her of the habit is to get her hockey skates, which don't have the toe picks, right?
That is maneuverable. I guess they are if you've learned how to do it.
Yeah, you know, they're pretty. Hockey players are pretty maneuverable. They're you know, they're not doing jumps.
And you can't do the sort of spins. Yeah. That's all on the toe pick when you do that spin.
Yeah. Well, there's a flat footed one, too, right? You could probably do somewhat of that on a hockey skate.
I don't think so. I mean, I watched something on how ice skaters do it, and they basically balance on the toe pick as they're spinning.
Oh.
But, that's physics again. It's angular momentum.
Right.
It's all that cool
stuff. So, but it, I can just see the way she's going. She's using the toe picks to propel herself instead of, you know, a skating glide. And she's, you know, she would get going pretty fast. And then she couldn't keep going because she couldn't, you know, do the toe pick stride. So I'm like, how am I going to break this? And at the end, I'm like, you know what? I think I need to put her in hockey skates. At least until she figures out how to go, right?
Well, maybe she'll figure it out on her own.
Maybe. I think, like I was trying to tell her, like, the way you're skating is fine, but it's harder than the right way, you know?
But, I mean, you have to learn a whole new physical maneuver. It's difficult at first. It's like, you know, it's like with the cards. And when I'm trying to learn a new way of holding, a new way of manipulating them, the first couple times I do it, the first days or so that I do it, I'm not very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still not very good at it.
But, you know, if I can't get her to listen to not do what she's doing, right? One way to break that bad habit is to take away those toe picks.
Damn it. Not very good.
Trying to shoot cards off.
It's called the bullet card maneuver. And uh-huh.
There you go. Like that. Cool. He's pulling it back so there's a recoil in the card, and then he lets go and it shoots off the deck.
It's kind of neat. Just neat little sort of flourish. You can't really do anything. There's no tricks you can do with it. It's just fun. It's like the riffle.
And then I have my own block in ice skating that I'm trying to get over. It's always been this way. You know, probably about 15 years ago or so, I got a pair of rollerblades and was trying to learn to skate on those. And I got to the point where I could get on the outside of my right skate, you know, like do crossovers and do a right-hand turn. But I could never do the same thing to the left side. I think I might have talked about this a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So yesterday, I spent a lot of time trying to get on the outside of my left skate. And I don't... I think I got slightly better yesterday, but I don't know why. I can get on the outside of the right skate. I can really push into it, and I can accelerate on a turn. But going left hand, on the left outside of my left hand skate, I just can't get on it for some reason. It just, I don't know. I mean, I need to have someone videotape me so I can see what I'm doing or something. I don't know. But it's like, come on. I know what I want to do here. Why can't I get the feel of it?
It's,
especially when I can do it in one direction, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's your weaker side, you know, and let's face it, we're getting up in our age, and it's harder for us to
learn new things.
I mean, it's not impossible. It's just I read an interesting article, something about that, how there is new evidence. I don't have the full story, so I can't, you know, claim to really know if this is true or not. But there's new evidence, or at least a new paper out that states that you know how you start to forget things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you get older, I'm sure you've noticed it. I mean, you forget the words for remote control, the thingy. The paper suggests that it's not that your brain is deteriorating; it's that it's so full of information, it's harder for your brain to search and get to the information.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
I'm so damn smart that I can't find what I need.
It feels right, right? Because you're like, oh, okay, so it's not that the inevitable march of time is making my brain turn to mush. It's that the inevitable march of time is making it so that there's so much in there that it has to sift through it and it can't find it all.
I don't know. It sounds optimistic.
It does sound a little optimistic. But
let's see.
I'll wait till there's more confirmation on that. But I thought it was interesting.
Watch the first three episodes of True Detective. So yeah, keep watching that for sure. The Americans is on. Watch that. That's pretty good this season.
I still have yet to watch that. That's on my list.
It's pretty good. We talked about it a little bit last week. I think setting it for people listening, right? It's set in
the 80s
America. And there's deep cover Russian spies that pass as Americans, live as Americans. And, so you're rooting for the bad guys, you know, because you get to know these people, right? Mm-hmm. So you're rooting for the people that in real life are the bad guys, you know, for Americans. And and also the complexity of them,
it's that old thing, once you know somebody, it's a lot harder to hate them.
Yeah. Right.
It's much easier to hate a caricature.
There's a lot of great plots. I mean, they're Russians fighting for the motherland, but they're also firsthand seeing how great it is to live in America, So there's some of that strife, and obviously season two started, so that they don't defect. But, there's a plot point in season one where they're considering defecting, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think I much spoiled it since season two had started. You probably figured they didn't defect.
Unless they're now the real Americans.
Right. Just boring, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I think that spies are sort of... conditioned. It's kind of like what they do in boot camp and military, right? The whole point is to break you down, is to break all the things that you normally do and sort of instill this kind of instinctual thing about following orders.
Mm-hmm.
And so that when you're in a pressure situation, you fall back on that training. You fall back on just following orders and just doing the directive instead of actually thinking about it. Because mm-hmm. if you were to actually think about it, you're obviously going to be paralyzed with fear because it's a ridiculous situation. So they want to have the very basis of in that situation, you just falling back onto your training.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think the spies are probably the same way. There's a training that they have, and you know, if they think too hard about something, they can fall back on their training and just, you know, I was trained to do this particular thing and this is what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, sir. Let's see, what else was I had something else I wanted to talk about. The real life enactment of Lost is starting up, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe. I mean, there's some evidence that there might be a terrorist attack.
Mm.
Because there are two people with stolen passports were on board the plane.
Okay.
And they've put out some, you know, reports, or at least, you know, some news things covering, and said one person with a stolen passport is very unlikely to happen on a plane. Two people is almost, you know, it's ridiculously.
So when you say two people with stolen passports, who was on the plane? The person without the passport or the passport?
No, the passport was on the plane. Oh, okay. These people had reported their passports as stolen like over a year ago.
Oh, okay. And they used them to board the plane?
Mm-hmm.
I see. Sounds like Lost to me. It's Dharma.
They also found an oil slick in the water.
Okay, I didn't hear about that. I heard that there was like no signs yet.
No, they haven't found wreckage yet, but they found an oil slick in the water where it seems like it's likely that they went down, and the fact that it was at really one of the safest parts of a flight, and then all of a sudden
mm-hmm.
disappeared, makes it likely that something drastic happened.
Right.
We don't know yet, though. It's still, you know, it's just, it's what, it's the 8th, it's 9 o'clock on the 8th. But I just got a CNN news report that the FBI is sending agents to support the investigation. The FBI isn't going to do that if they don't think that there's something
right.
fishy going on.
Right.
You know, they may send the NTSB, but it's not a U.S. thing, but they may send, you know, experts in the NTSB.
I saw a headline today that Russia indicated that they might annex Crimea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Do you think that... What role does NASA's dependence on the Russian Space Agency play in our treatment of Russia for this kind of stuff, I wonder?
The problem is that everything is now so much more interconnected in the world. There isn't just this, you know, this iron curtain. There isn't just a separation of two
mm-hmm.
two society. Everything is so connected that I don't think that they will be able to get to a situation where they can just say, all right, well, we're not going to use you anymore. That's just not realistic anymore. The world is a much more pluralistic place. That's why
we start sanctioning Russia, right? And Putin says, okay, fuck you, no more trips to the space station for you.
I I think that it's a mutually beneficial thing, so I doubt that will happen, but it's certainly possible. But the sanctions are all about making a point.
Not letting NASA astronauts to the space station also makes a point.
It makes a point, but it makes a point that people don't care about anymore. So, you know, the whole point of sanctions is to hit Russia in their pocketbook, not to hit them in something that, mm-hmm. that is, you know, at best, you know, if you had a list of things that were important to America and Russia, mm-hmm. the space program is somewhere down in the 500s. So, you know, it's important to you and me, mm-hmm. you know, because we think it's, you know, it's just important to keep that science stuff. But they care about the economics of it. They care about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Denying the whole, I don't think it makes sense, but I don't know for sure. We could see something along those lines, but I think the sanctions are also kind of an empty threat. Russia is certainly big enough and has enough power that they could power their way around any dumb sanctions the U.S. puts on them. You know, they have lots of ties with the EU. They have lots of ties with China, lots of ties with the Middle East. It's not a situation where we can just blanket deny a country as big as Russia.
Mm-hmm. I was watching, I guess it was probably Thursday night's Daily Show. Uh-huh. See this one where they?
I didn't see it. No.
They had a bunch of clips from Fox News where they had O'Reilly and all the assholes talking about what a great leader Putin is compared to Obama because yeah. he just gets shit done.
Right. The whole conservative reaction to this has been it's been this weird kind of, they love Putin because they kind of want somebody who they feel is strong, but at the same
enemy
time,
of my enemy is my friend.
But at the same time, they want the U.S. to be the big power, so they don't like Putin, and there's this. You know, and they don't like swinging a Russian. They say the U.S. should be swinging its dick around. It's like that's not what we do anymore. It's not how the world uh-huh. works.
Yeah.
But they still live in the 80s. They still live in that time period. That you know, they constantly go back to Reagan. Why do they constantly go back to Reagan? Because that was the glory days of the conservative ideal. That was when, you know, it seemed like the capitalist society was going to, you know, turn the earth into uh-huh. bounty,
mm-hmm.
and it was going to just smash everything and replace it with a capitalist utopia.
But I mean, they were saying the stuff that they were saying about Putin versus it was I couldn't believe American like news stations, like just American citizens were saying things like that. It was like, how I don't know, it just, you know, it's agenda first, but I mean, just the maybe. Because they isolated the clips and played them all back to back, it escalated, you know, the feel like, I can't believe that, you know, it just seemed.
I don't know. I mean, from what I remember of Fox, you know, I don't have cable now, so I don't watch it anymore.
Right.
But from what I remember of Fox News, it's pretty much like that nonstop.
Well, right, but it's talking about how bad the Democratic president is, not saying, you know,
it's just a propaganda thing. Yeah.
But pinning your hero on Vladimir Putin is insane.
There's this weird you know what it is? It's the Schwarzenegger thing, right? They like the idea of a strong man of some sort. There's that famous quote that when fascism arrives in America, it'll be wrapped in a flag and a cross. And that's exactly the case.
Well, that's it. I mean, I don't know. I would love to see, you know, a definition of dictator versus the achievements of Putin, right? And to see how close those are.
I showed you that fascism, you know, versus capitalism picture, didn't I?
No, I don't think so. But, like, you know, sure, Putin's elected and whatnot, but, you know, how free and open that was.
Yeah.
You know, and the rules that he's rewritten and stuff, you know. Okay, so fascism is a giant foot standing on the backs of a bunch of people.
In black and white.
In grayscale. And capitalism is the same foot on the same backs of people with balloons and rainbow colors and a clown floating around.
Now, of course, that's an oversimplification, but there's truth in that. You know, this is one of those, you know, political cartoons where there's a truth underneath the silliness. There's a lot of a lot of fancy stuff that we get in capitalism that we don't get in fascism, and the fancy stuff helps to sort of opiate.
Right. I mean, yes,
what's going around?
Putin is a strong and decisive leader, but he's also
not a strong and decisive presence. I mean, he's just a KGB man. You know, he's doing the same kind of shtick that Russia did all the time. He's Ivan Drago, right? He's I must break you. And I don't think, you know, and the thing was that we had Rocky to fight him, and now we don't have Rocky. We have Barack Obama. And
someone at work showed me this. Did you ever see the picture of Putin in disguise or like as a citizen, like in a photo of Reagan when he was in Moscow?
No.
So, you know, he was KGB, right?
Yeah.
There was a photo. I should find it here. Start looking for it. Look for the Putin-Reagan KGB photo. Okay. They're in Moscow, Red Square, someplace like that. And Reagan's like posing for a photograph or signing an autograph or something like that. And Putin is closer to the president than the Secret Service because he was there with a kid. Yeah, there.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. You know, what was he there for? You know, put a little arsenic or cyanide pill, you know, pellet in his leg, you know, polonium-232.
I don't think that, I don't think that Russia was, you know, at that point in time, everyone kind of knew that the whole idea of a nuclear war was just a bad idea. It was unwinnable, and doing something like that would just be a precipice to a war.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, he wasn't. I'm sure he was just there to monitor the situation and to, you know, to report. It was not as, you know, if that is him, and that's, you know, it's probably him, but it looks very similar to him. I'm sure he was just there to monitor the situation. I don't think he was there to, plant a, maybe he was, he could have tried to plant a bug on him.
Mm-hmm.
But a poison device? No, that's a little too cloak and dagger, 1960s right. kind of thing.
Sure, yeah. It's like, oh wow,
yeah.
There's Putin.
Yeah, there he is,
pretending to be a plain old citizen, and his son's shaking Reagan's hand, his fake son.
It's a different world now. It really is. Mm-hmm. And it's a much more complicated world that no one is going to be in the position, or at least the way it looks is that for the foreseeable future, there's not going to be anybody who's going to be in the position of sole superpower or the country that's running the world. There's this illusion in the U.S. and through the U.S. media that the U.S. is the country that's running the world. That's not the way it's working. I mean, the U.S. is still the most robust economy and stuff like that, and all the economies base their stuff on that, and that's still going on. But that is flaky, especially with the way that things have precipitated with with people manipulating the financial markets and doing stuff like that. So other economies and other economic groups have gone up in stature and in ability to influence people's decision making. And the whole idea that we can just project our military force everywhere, I mean, it's a good way to prevent us from being attacked, but at the same time, it doesn't have the same kind of power that it used to have. especially as more and more countries are acquiring nuclear weapons.
Yep.
I don't know what you're going to do.
Yep.
Yep. Did you watch this week's Community?
The app one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that one.
The first time I saw it, I was kind of meh on it. And then I watched it again, and I thought it was goddamn brilliant.
I thought it was pretty good.
It was a tour de force. It really was, because I had to watch it again. I guess it wasn't in the right headspace or whatever, but when I watched it again and I thought about, you know, first of all, I thought it was strangely very insightful social commentary, at the same time using the language from the 70s dystopian, like, uh-huh, Logan's Run. And
well, right. I mean, I really liked how they went from everyone's face was buried in their smartphone, uh-huh, to you wore your smartphone,
right?
You know, and I mean, you couldn't, yeah, and it recorded what your status, you know.
And in the Community world, it just escalated that quickly into this dystopian, yeah, society. And then they had, you know, the ridiculous future. And I loved all the tiny little details. Like in the future dance, they had these little, mm-hmm, you know, balls on top of their hands. Yeah. And they were drinking out of like little beakers. And these beautiful little things that you catch and you're like, wow. They're really paying attention to what's going on in the show. This is a show that there's no way this show is going to appeal to everybody like The Big Bang Theory. Mm-hmm. This is a show that is for a very specific type of people who love that kind of thing. But man, for those people like you and me, it's hard.
I'll bet. Oh yes, I have small talk now.
There's so many little things that were just great about that. There was actually an episode of a British series called Black Mirror. I don't know if you've heard of this.
I don't think so.
It's a 6-episode series that was sort of about technology, and so it's sort of an anthology about kind of the Twilight Zone-y technology stories. Very, very good, mm-hmm, for the most part. The very last episode wasn't very good, but two of them in particular stand out to me. And one of them was an episode that kind of had the same premise.
Okay.
Which is a future where everything is turned into a virtual game, and then there is a group of people who judge you and decide if you get to move on from doing your little game to doing something else. And
I can't get beyond level 4. The 5s have it all locked up.
Yeah.
And then they got into that whole, you know, gladiatorial arena, you know, ancient Rome type thing.
So, yeah.
Oh, so good.
I should give you those.
And then Winger doing the stand-up. Oh, it was like all the typical stand-ups, but based on the memes of this,
yeah,
brand new dystopian culture. Oh, the 4 walks like this. Oh, it was really funny.
It was great, and especially if you've seen like Logan's Run and Zardoz or any of those, uh-huh, mid-70s things, Buck Rogers, you know, that kind of stuff where the future is portrayed as these very stratified societies, and you have your animals, and you have your there's a lot of social commentary. The episode wasn't huge on, you know, big laugh out loud laughs, but the whole thing was just so clever and so tingly in, mm-hmm, your mind.
I'm surprised you didn't like it the first time. Maybe you were distracted or something.
Yeah,
I watched it, and it was, you know, there's been times where you've called it a classic, you know, and I just watched it and I enjoyed it, but I really didn't get it. And this one, I'm like, wow, this one's hitting it. This one's really hitting it.
I find that Community is a show that really rewards a rewatch. And so I always try to rewatch it, especially I mean, I rewatch them when I love them, mm-hmm. but you know, I really go back to them when I don't love them. I see if there's something in there that I missed, and because sometimes you're just not in the right headspace to mm-hmm. enjoy it, you know, right. whatever the reason. I guess I was tired at the time, and I wasn't fully. It felt a little.
It's like last night. I almost started watching the fourth episode of True Detective, but I was getting dozed off. Yeah. I'm like, no, I got to stop this. I can't doze off and miss parts of.
I think I was also distracted by the fact that. You know, all in all, it was a little rushed. It felt like that episode of Community. There was probably a 35 or 36 minute director's cut that they cut down to 22 minutes because there was a lot of material in there that pretty clearly had to be cut.
Well, like, you know, Annie made it up to 5 for no apparent reason. Maybe
she
that was.
Four. She was a 4.
Oh.
She was a 4. Members surely allowed her to speak.
But did I miss where she got promoted up to the 5s?
She was never a 5. She was a 4.
But she was in the...
She was a helper to the 5s.
Oh. Okay. I missed that.
Yeah. I love the little... The Tim and Eric and you know, their little cameo where they were the future. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was so... So evocative of those...
And the thing. What was it? The after credits? The spin-off? Oh, the
Coogler. And you know who that was?
I don't. I was trying to place him. I didn't know if that was.
That's Mitch Hurwitz.
Oh, okay.
Who created Arrested Development.
Okay.
Yeah. And he was great in that role.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I recognize the you know, the other guy he was with. I forget his name, but you know, the guy with the red hair, the beard, the glasses. Early on, when he was in the first scene.
That was Steve Agee and Brian Posehn.
Agee, that's it. Yeah. Brian Posehn. Okay. Agee. Steve. Maybe I'm confusing scenes, but okay. Yeah, the Coogler guy, I'm like, I knew him, but I didn't know him, you know? I'm like, that's got to be someone, but I'm not sure who it was.
Yeah, that's the guy who created Arrested Development.
Whole Coogler movie.
Yeah, that was just a beautiful piece of entertainment mm-hmm. that I think, you know, when I watched it the second time, I was like, this is a class. This is... Just, this is one of the best things I've seen Community do, and mm-hmm. I love it to death. Not everyone's going to agree with me, but you do, and Greg does. Talk to Greg a little bit
about what we talked
about on the last show, and you know we'll talk about it more when he comes to town. But mm-hmm. it seems like he agrees with a lot of what I'm saying. I, you know, jokingly said, "Oh, that's because I'm right," but you know, I argue vociferously, but I don't profess to have all the answers. But I do feel like there's a problem with this, the concept that the only way that's reasonable to succeed is what is. What is immediately valuable to society, to wealth building, as opposed to the fact that people on their own are valuable to society simply because that's what happens. I mean, I made a point on Twitter. I talked about how, let's see if I can get the exact wording I use, because I think it's important to think about it this way. And I'm sorry if, you know, if I'm just boring people, but I have to get this out. So, you know, the pre-show and post-show are for Jeff and me mostly. Anyway, so, a jazz session, an improv group, a political rally, an angry mob, a yoga class, a church service, a basketball team, a comedy crowd. These are all examples of this sort of group mind phenomenon. This phenomena that we see, this sort of emergent group mind, and this is something that is not. There's nothing supernatural about it. It's just it's the way that we behave. It's the way that we evolve to behave, and other social animals do the same way. Having people around you makes you better, whether or not they're directly contributing to your wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And letting people die because they're not directly contributing to your wealth is just not a good policy. That's where it comes from.
Okay.
Should we move on to the show?
I think we should drink some beer. We drank the East End Brewing's Monkey's Uncle Weissenbach for the pre-show.
Yeah.
Nice warm up. Mm-hmm. Good beer.
Yeah, it's good beer. It's nice. It's a little on the sappy side, a little bit of extra sort of, you know, piney, resiny. It was a little strong, but I kind of like it.
That's usually what a Weizenbach is, a little strong.
Yeah, yeah.